David Eichholt and myself are back to break down Tuesday's press conference with Coach Ferentz, which focused on the departure of two Hawkeyes from Iowa City and the quarterback conversation. Will there be a point in this season where we see Brendan Sullivan as the starter, and what does that provide? Is there a downside? And what does this Washington game mean for the team going forward as far as success at the end of the season? Let's have a day. Let's go. Mug is that?
My nephew got for me.
Wow. 8-year-old, little customized it, little Cuphead.
Oh,
cute, right?
Love that. I've actually never played, but I've this is getting really abstract, but Miguel Racinos.
Oh yeah.
Legendary Hawkeye kicker. He played Cuphead for a while and always used to tell me about it. Yeah, one of my favorite
take up way too much of my life for a little while.
Yeah. One of my favorite things was Miguel's, we'll call them nerdy hobbies.
He was like a big Pokemon head too or something, wasn't he?
He, you name it with Miguel.
I think it got brought up in some media scrum and he ended up talking about it for like 20 minutes one time.
He I wish people could really get into the mind of Miguel. He, whatever you wanted to talk about, he's your guy. He would talk about it with you for 30 minutes, an hour. The conversations that I had with Miguel Racinos throughout 90-minute, two-hour-plus practices for 4 years were – it's honestly something that I miss in my life now because
– that'd be maybe, that'd be a hell of a podcast name too, right? The Mind of Miguel.
Oh, God. That would be one unbelievable – well, he's
– Washed up walk-on spinoff?
Yeah, I think – yeah, we could add that to the lineup of shows that we're pumping out this season. I believe that in less than a year's time, he's set to officially be a doctor. So you think about that. He's been on the path to being a doctor. He was 1 year behind me.
Yeah.
He is almost done with school. I've been done with school for 7 years.
So yeah, pretty much.
that's
I cannot do school that long.
That's just him. I mean, starting your life, starting your job at 30, 31. I mean, Jesus. like for the first time. That's way too much school. Anyway, welcome in, everybody. It's a KF Press Review show. Maybe a weird intro because, again, I don't know. David and I seem to find ways to draw this out, find stuff to talk about. There's always something new and exciting to preview as we get into a new week with a new matchup, new team. A really new team this week. Going in to play Washington. First matchup with them as part of the Big Ten. Our first matchup with one of the new four teams. And really just an exciting weekend of college football overall. If you're a college football fan.
This is going to be good.
This is a big one.
I'm going to find a way to watch football despite even covering this game because there's just so many. This is the weekend I feel like we've been talking about for the last 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. At least. This is. I think technically it's week six.
Whatever. We go by week zero now. It's just.
Yeah. Everybody's looking at this one. Obviously, you've got Ohio State, Oregon within the conference. That's the big matchup. I know there's other big matchups across the country. And we get an 11 o'clock kickoff. First one of the year, right? First 11 o'clock game?
Was. Season opener 11. Illinois State, I think, was 11.
That might have been 11. First Big Ten game at the 11 o'clock slot. And
home opener, Big Ten, middle of October.
Yeah, true. And that's important because there's a team coming all the way from literally the West Coast. So that's going to feel a little bit different for them. It's going to be, what is that, 9 o'clock their time?
Yeah.
So that's weird. I think that is something that I don't think it's something that you can really use as an excuse for poor play. It's definitely something to manage, though, within the program, whether it's Washington coming out here or, I mean, you think about something like Penn State or Rutgers going to the other side of the country or Oregon or UCLA traveling to Penn State or Rutgers, that is, I mean, it's almost worth going a day early, I think.
Yeah.
If no, I was absolutely. The coach, if I was the coach or if I was on staff, that's what I would be trying to do. I'd try to set up the travel plan for like Thursday night and try and do all of Friday, like on site. Nonetheless, KF stood at the podium for about 25 minutes. It always feels like they're just like, all right, guys, come on. Like, we're just trying to get this done with. And that's probably the way that like most press conferences feel. It's just this very like, we have to do this sort of thing. I know KF doesn't, I don't think he enjoys standing at the podium. He doesn't look forward to it each week. But
I don't think he minds it, but it totally depends on the context of the week leading up to it. Because at times, if he can give you a wisecrack or two or a couple good stories, then I think I'm not going to say he enjoys it, but like it doesn't bother him.
No, I think he's been doing it long enough where he fully understands and accepts it as part of the job.
Yeah,
but it always does feel, and it's just sort of the nature of getting up at a podium and then stepping off of a podium. It just always sort of feels like, all right, thanks, guys. And then you hear him pick up his stuff and it like, and then he steps off and it's like, he's gone. It's like, wow, they're trying to rush him out of there. Like six questions. You guys are done. but maybe that's just because I like listening to KF talk and I've listened to KF talk a lot in my life. And I just want more. And for this episode each week, I'd like more too. It was funny. Started off with the old, the super respectful, you know, pump up the opponent, fluff them up a little bit of Jed Fish and the Washington program. All of the nice comments from KF. I don't think any of that is BS, but he does like he puts on a little bit of. I think there's a little bit of perfume in that.
KF says nice things about PJ Fleck. That's all you really need to know.
He's very good at it too. He's very good at it. Like I don't even know if I can sit here and say with. You know, again, more experience with Coach Ferentz one-on-one than a lot of people.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I can get up here and say like, yeah, that's for sure just BS coach talk. I believe it a lot of the times. I think he finds ways to say things or certain parts about different programs or people that he actually does believe to be true when it comes out of his mouth. Again, I don't think KF is a liar. We talked about this last week. So, and then the funny comment of the day is that Jed Fish's wife
loves Kirk.
Her favorite coach is Kirk Ferentz.
Yep.
I don't understand that. I don't know where that comes from. They said that he told him that personally. I don't know when Jed and Kirk would have seen each
Big
other.
Big Ten media days.
Okay. All right.
Big Ten media days. That's when that allegedly happened. And it was funny stuff. And, you know, the other part too about being a head coach, and I think when you talk about Kirk picking and choosing what to say nice things about program, I feel like, yes, you can have your pent-up competitiveness and your own feelings toward a program or people. But if you're a head coach, you have to step back and be objective about the team you're facing and about aspects of certain programs that are very good. Like, even if you hate them beyond hating them, it's like saying, yeah, Nebraska is a really bad football program. Like, okay, historically, they're not.
Yeah,
they're just not. As much as you want to hate them, they still have the history. You can go up and down the list of, I feel like, any program. It takes a whole lot to be like, yeah, that's a complete dumpster fire. There are no good aspects of it. Like, hell, even Rutgers at this point, what Greg Schiano's done with Rutgers, look at Coach Sig at Indiana. Now, Indiana.
I love that guy. I love that guy.
I do too.
Did you see
they replayed as part of the hype up video? Did you see they replayed it where he just goes, all I do is win. Google me.
Dude, what a quote. And then somebody said something like, I saw that on Twitter, that God, that's such a sick quote. And to back, but it's true though. Cause then someone's like, I Googled him. He's like 140-40 or something like that. It's like his record is actually insane. which makes me think like immediately, like he's that confident. He has that record over that many games. Is Indiana just a top half of the Big Ten team constantly now? Like, I think they might be, like, with that kind of...
You also need to think about this, and this is where we could get off track, but it's also worth noting. Indiana is always going to be a basketball school.
Yeah.
Coach Sig's good enough to where, let's say, you know, Florida fires Billy Napier.
Or Florida
State. That'd be one of my first calls is to go get that guy.
Yeah, we brought that up. Grant and I did on a podcast, I think last week or the week before. we're like, Indiana's going to be great. And then, you know, as it happens in the professional world, guys are always, doesn't matter if it's sports or not, you're looking to ascend the ladder, bigger pay, bigger titles, bigger responsibilities. At least a lot of guys like that are, or women. I saw that a female coached an NHL game last night. Did you see that?
It's crazy. It's really cool.
Seattle Kraken.
Yeah.
By the way,
that's a top five most badass name. And
didn't know that they were even a team. I don't follow hockey in the slightest, but I now have a team to root for. I am officially a Seattle Kraken fan.
There you go. Recruitment's closed.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm out of the portal. Unlike several of our players.
Speaking of the portal.
Yeah, that we'll get to in a second. I did want to touch on Rutgers' schedule real quick, though.
Yeah.
They are home versus Wisconsin this weekend.
I love that matchup. I'm really excited for that.
That could be a fantastic football game. They're home versus UCLA. That's probably a win. They go to USC. That's a tough ball game. They're home versus Minnesota. They play at Maryland. Home versus Illinois at Michigan State. We could be looking at a 10-2 Rutgers ball club.
My favorite over in the country for win totals preseason was Rutgers.
What was it? Like six and a half?
I think it was 6.5.
Oh my God.
And I looked at that schedule and I'm like, guys, they're not gonna be bad. Like if I bet on Big Ten teams, I would have put a lot of American currency on that team to go.
I should hop on those win total prop bets, because I feel like I'm mostly like, of course, it's confirmation bias within my own self, but I feel like they're actually easier than people think if you know teams and you know rosters.
Yeah.
And you just look at schedules, right? And it takes a little bit of, you got to go and look at it. But I think, and their running back, the Manungai.
Yeah, he's a stud. Like
after Jeanty and Caleb Johnson and a couple other dudes, like that guy's probably a top five back in the country. That dude is insane.
Yeah. But the other part too is, I mean, be so patient to do those win total bets, Kluve. Like, I cannot wait that long to see if a bet goes through.
Oh, I something in. No big deal for me. People want to see that instant stuff.
I need that dopamine kick.
Yeah, I get it. I understand. Let's talk about the portal. As I mentioned it.
Yep.
You know, somebody asked him the question, like, hey, what is it about? I think it's kind of started with, what is it about? What is it about Jacob Gill and Reese that has them playing, finding reps on the field, them kind of contributing, doing well, versus somebody like Caleb Johnson or Caleb Brown, who just couldn't find time on the field and didn't really figure it out. And coach kind of started it with, like, he doesn't want to talk about anybody that's not here. Which is like, so KF.
I was going to say, that's par for the course. That's not a sole Caleb Brown thing, so I would not overread into that at all. Like, he just doesn't talk like that much.
Yeah, KF is just not going to be the guy, especially one day after it's announced the guy's leaving the program, to get up there and be like, well, Caleb, now that he's not in the program anymore, just couldn't do this, he couldn't do that, he wasn't good at this, he wasn't good at that. Like,
to be fair, Lester did that during his bye week.
He did, but... I think we talked about it. Lester has a way of kind of like he not sugarcoating it, but just wording it in a way that was like very objective and respectful, but true. And KF is just like, I'm not even going to touch it. Like, I'm not going to create unnecessary drama by talking about a guy who's now going to try and go play for another program. Like, he just leaves it be. And I think that's very KF of him. But I think if you listen to that answer about Gill and Reese, and why they have done well, what is good about them, you get the answer sort of on the other side of what maybe Caleb wasn't doing. Like, what are these guys doing? That's why they're playing. Well, that's maybe why other guys aren't playing. And he was talking about stuff like they're very detailed. They work very hard in practice. They're always giving 100% effort. He retroactively went back and talked about the Caleb Johnson broken touchdown run on Minnesota and how Gill's in there making a crucial block. It's just the dirty stuff, I think he said, kind of the dirty work is a lot of what these guys like to do. And it's, that is the kind of stuff that earns you reps within the Iowa program. And
you know what showed me, and this is my interpretation of it. Caleb Brown didn't know the damn playbook.
Yeah. And I think
that's what I think it comes down to. Now, again, that's not anything I've been told. I don't want to spread misinformation, but the way KF worded it, and when you see like guys like Dayton Howard, Jarriott Bowie getting more reps than them, yeah. Like with all due respect to them, I think they could be pretty decent players. I love Dayton Howard's upside. I think he needs to just continue to get more reps. He was a late bloomer in the football recruiting world. I just think that they're more, like you said, detail oriented. I think they understand the timing better. And I think they knew what Tim Lester is looking for when it comes to the wide receiver room, where as Caleb, I believe, was more athletically gifted than a lot of the guys in the wide receiver room. But yeah. Just because you're an athlete, that does not mean you're going to be able to put it together to be an effective piece in the offense that Iowa was trying to run.
It's something that kind of goes under, like for me personally, I don't even consider it, because as a long snapper, there wasn't a playbook, right? Yeah.
Yep.
There was, we had a bunch of formations. We had a bunch of movement on like pre-snap on punts. Yep. There was stuff that I needed to know, and there was stuff I needed to know outside of just, hey, go snap ball, right? It wasn't total caveman. But as far as like learning an offensive or defensive playbook, I personally, as someone who now talks about football players or analyzes or, you know, whatever, I'm in the position I'm in with this podcast, I haven't done that myself since I was a senior in high school playing middle linebacker.
Sure.
And to be frank, the Marshalltown defensive playbook wasn't thick. Right. It was basically, hey, go tackle the guy. So it's something that I often don't think about with these guys, is like, why is it that they're not playing? Why is it that they're not doing well? And I think it's maybe something that a lot of fans maybe don't quite think about. I think fans, similar to how when a punt team runs out, they just expect the snap to be good. I always used to think about this, like no one really ever thinks about it. They just watch the guy catch the ball. And now they're looking at the punt. I think they don't think about the snap potentially being bad. I don't think they think about some guys not playing or not doing well or not being involved in the offense or defense, because it could be a potential playbook issue. I think people just assume that all the guys know all the plays.
Yep, I agree.
And I think that this could be a scenario where that is not the case. I think Caleb maybe was struggling with the playbook, maybe not to some crazy extent. You know, it could have been little things. You know, turning, you know, like Lester said, on that one route, like we broke off a route just at the wrong angle. Instead, you know, it could be little things like that. Not knowing what route to run when you have an option or a certain look, but in a zone defense. But
to me, that's still that all goes back to the same thing as you and I are talking about, though. To me, you just don't know the playbook. You know enough to what you're supposed to do, but you don't know the fine line and the finer details of what actually makes the play work.
Sure.
Versus, okay, I'm in a general vicinity. I can cut this way. I can look at the coverage. I'm supposed to do this, but I end up taking the other way. I mean, it all comes back to, if you don't know the playbook, you don't know the playbook.
And to be fair, like in our offense with our wide receiver usage, even though it's more now with Tim Lester, like you can be as skilled as you want. It's probably going to be this way at most places.
Yeah.
If you don't know the plays, like that's going to be number one, because you can't unlock your playmaking ability if you don't know the routes you're running or the schemes. So that's kind of probably the last we'll have to talk about him, because he's going to go and, you know, KF wished him well, as he always does. He hopes they're happy. He hopes they find a place to play. LaShawn was the other one. Obviously, Caleb has had some crazy, like historic, almost national rise this year. Jazz has been, as we sort of pontificated on before it happened, really now Jazz has become like the second option. And now there's Kamar, you know, we still have Kamari Moulton as well. LaShawn, he mentioned, has just, and you sort of thought about this or mentioned this a few weeks ago. You thought like LaShawn just was still not healthy. And KF all but confirmed that. I think he said the words like he just hasn't been healthy fully in months, like since spring.
Yeah.
So that's tough. Health is an issue. I can name guy after guy after guy that I played with that should have been great at Iowa, could have gone on to the NFL, and they just couldn't stay healthy. And it's an unfortunate reason, but it's a real reason.
And this makes total sense for LeSean. I mean, I think they're two totally different scenarios is what I would tell people. Caleb, I don't know when he would have saw the field, and I think just everything leading up to this point, I mean, even when he was out against Ohio State, in the back of my mind, I had speculated if something like this was going to happen. I was told by people when I texted a couple people close to the program that it could have been, but they weren't 100% sure on the circumstances. And I'm not – look, there are things I will put in my message board or whatever to speculate on. I hate speculating transfers. Oh, this guy might transfer, because I think it just stirs up unnecessary drama. I don't think it makes any sense for people, and I don't want to speculate. If I know they're going to enter the portal, I'll report it, right? That, I think most Iowa journalists are going to feel the same way. When it comes to transfers, I don't like touching it regarding that. Caleb Brown's going to redshirt. He's got 2 years of eligibility. Remember, there was speculation that he could have had two more after this season, but the NCAA denied a waiver or kind of clarified something that he only has this year and next year. So I don't blame Caleb. If he wants to go and try to go to probably has to transfer down to a lower level, I would think at this point, to go make some NIL money, to go put himself in a position to maybe get drafted. Wish him well. LeSean, I think he's an older running back. He only has this year of eligibility. Redshirt, be healthy, transfer down a level, make a lot of NIL money, especially as a running back. There's not a lot of shelf life. And in the context behind it all too, and this is nothing against Caleb Brown, it just makes total sense for LeSean because he needed an opportunity in his final year. Yeah. And combined not being healthy, I would not be surprised if LeSean goes to like Northern Illinois and just goes and tears it up.
I was going to say, I think there's even a chance for him to land somewhere in the Power Four.
Yeah,
If they just like happen to be looking in the portal, they see LeSean, they go look at his tape, and they just happen to not be super confident in what they have in the running back room, or they're telling LeSean like, hey, we've got a guy, we'd like two guys. I think LeSean has the ability at full health and has proven on tape that he can go be a starting running back in a Power Four level.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
It's more so about a spot being open because most Division One football teams and money, right? And money. Most Power Four football teams are going to have two, three guys that are in line. But if there just happens to be a spot where they're like, oh, we had a couple things happen and we need a guy, I think he's got the talent to go. Or I think the floor is for him to go to the MAC or somewhere like that and just absolutely destroy, run for 100 yards a game in the MAC and be awesome.
LeSean's a great kid on top of everything else too. And again, I'm not saying Caleb Brown is not, but LeSean's been, I think he's been a very big team leader over the past couple of years, led the team in rushing yards last season.
Yeah.
Just a really good dude. I think he's going to land somewhere, make a lot of money, and hopefully he has a healthy last year too.
There was several quarterback questions, one from you, one from, I believe, Tashman. I think is how you say that last name, Tyler Tashman.
Yep.
From the Des Moines Register. And the question that Tashman asked about, I think he mentioned like Cohen and Deshaun Lee and several guys getting chances and working in different guys at different positions and just seeing who works at a certain spot. And then looking at Cade versus that and saying, what's the reluctance or what makes the quarterback spot different? He asked the question really well, because whenever you're going to ask about the quarterback, especially at Iowa, it feels like the last few years.
Yeah.
It feels like it probably feels like an attack. And Tashman, he
prefaced everything by saying, hey, I'm not trying to go after you.
I'm like, I'm just not
wondering.
I just want to know, like, I seriously don't know. Can you inform me like why it would be at the quarterback position harder to give somebody a chance? KF completely coach speaked his way. KF out of that question.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was a great question by Tyler, I thought too.
It is. And I wish that, and maybe KF doesn't feel this way, but I wish in a way that KF would just be like, yeah, I mean, quarterback's a different position. Like, it just takes more to have to change the general of the army than one of the troops, right? I think that would be a good answer. Oh, no. We lost David Eichel.
Yo, my bad. I got a bunch of people messing around outside here, so it's...
Somebody clipped the internet line?
It might have. I'm on my hot spot right now, so hopefully this holds up a bit better.
David's lying to you all. He's trying to dodge the quarterback question.
Hey, that's what a lot of people have been saying about me in the media, too. We're not asking KF the hard questions.
Hey, when someone says when a fan tells a reporter or a media member, ask a harder question or ask the hard questions, I almost immediately get to just in my own head. This is how I just view that. Like, oh, you're a human that I'm not associating with. You just proved your intelligence and competence level by asking a reporter that question. I no longer need to have you as part of my life at all, ever.
There's two interesting aspects to it. One, like at times I'm just like, guys, read the transcripts. Like we ask the questions. You don't like the answers you get, but it's not because we're not asking. The other part is two things. One, it's not my job to go attack Kirk. It's not my job to go attack, you know, whoever I'm interviewing. I'm trying to get information. Now I might want to push them or ask a follow-up. That's fine. But the other part is I always envision the person who tells me to ask the tough questions. I'm like, brother, if you get within 10 feet of Kirk, you'd be pissing yourself.
Yeah, you'd be grabbing for the pen and the autograph. Like you're – yeah.
Like it's – yeah.
I get it. But – KF kind of coach-speaked his way through that. And then you asked another question about Cade, which I believe was something along the lines of...
essentially, what I asked...
You brought up the stat.
I knew he was going to be pissed at that.
He got immediately defensive and made sure to remind you that he was hurt for two of those years.
Well, it was interesting because I opened up the question by saying, I know Cade's been through a lot of injuries and adversity, because I knew if I went right into the stat, he was going to say that. Right. So like Tyler prefaced his, I was just like, hey, I know he's – and then I'm like, okay, Kirk interrupted me to tell me he's injured after I opened it up with he's injured.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, I thought about adding a follow-up part of it, but I think it would have totally gotten away from any sort of answer, because I wanted essentially to ask him, like, at what point – Do Saturday performances matter?
Yeah, and you like, again, you guys have a really tough job, because when you do touch the touchy subjects, immediately, especially a guy like KF, who he said is going to stand up for his players, stand up for his coaches, you're questioning at some point their decision-making, right? Or at least bringing the conversation to the table. And it's just a weird thing. And that's why these things happen, so that fans can get answers, people can get answers, people can write stories, there can be an ecosystem around the team.
Yeah.
But he did sort of get 5%.
It was better than I thought it was going to be. Let's put it that way.
And
for people who didn't read the transcript or watch it, I want to finish like the question part of it. I just said, what does K do day by day or throughout the week that gives you confidence that he can go out there and play on Saturdays or be productive for you on Saturdays?
And he got 5% defensive, which I thought was better than like getting like 50% defensive.
I was anticipating to get reamed.
And the answer that you got was something along the lines of, hey, you know, like we do evaluate all the quarterbacks, as you guys can probably guess. You know, he played a good first half efficiency wise. Like, you know, I think he mentioned the third quarter.
He did.
Was tough,
I thought he played fine against Ohio State the first half, but he had to hit Kane Weejin for that touchdown. That's the throw you have to complete.
That was a poor throw. It's a scramble play. Your heart rate's going a million miles an hour, but not even. Yeah, that was a tough one.
He was open. That's why if he was covered, that's different, but he was open.
KF's tone and vibe in his answer to your question gave me the general feel of, we see these guys more than you guys do.
Yep.
Trust us. Trust me / us in that we are putting the best guys out there. And this has been a huge topic of contention going all the way back to since Nate Stanley graduated. And Spencer Petras took over as quarterback, and we've had all these other options. Well, you had Padilla, you had Labus, you had Linez, you had Deacon Hill, all these guys. Like, and to some extent, I do think that this is just a product of the age-old truism that is the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy on the team.
Yep. I understand that.
I attribute it to some of that when fans or other people are like, hey, what? Why not the other guy? I think there's been some valid criticisms too, because when you look at the performances of Spencer Petras or Padilla or Deacon Hill or at times Cade, you're like, they're in the, like, if we're just looking at them statistically, take out the fandom, take out the bias of being the, you know, the Hawkeyes being my or your team, like, they do not rank well nationally, right? So there is some objective criticism there.
There's one difference between this year and any other year where this has been calling for. This is a proven Big Ten backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't some scrub. It's not, like, with all due respect to some of the former backup quarterbacks, they were not Big Ten caliber quarterbacks.
Or they hadn't proven Brendan, they hadn't proven to be.
They hadn't proven. Brendan Sewell, even, I'll say they weren't there because everywhere they've gone, they haven't played.
Sure.
You know?
You're like, right. Yeah, hindsight, like
Brendan,
they had.
Brendan Sullivan is a proven Big Ten quarterback. He would have started for Northwestern this season. Okay? Mm-hmm. And it gets to the point where, again, I don't want to sit here and say I know more about football than Kirk or about quarterbacks or whatever. But at some point, you brought in Brendan Sullivan because he is a Big Ten caliber player. Yeah. And again, I know he was going against backups against Ohio State, at least a couple backups. But he made a beautiful read option, made the right play, got 30 yards, hit Luke Lachey on a 12-yard route the next play. Like, it gets to the point where we ask, what's the upside? Or Brian said, what's the upside? What's the downside of at least running Brendan Sullivan out there for one half against Washington? And if he's bad, you throw back in Cade.
Yeah.
I just don't understand it. Like, I'm also of the belief, though, to where if Cade struggles against Washington and they lose, I do seriously believe that they will have a very close look in the mirror about putting in Brendan Sullivan, especially since Brendan will be playing against his former team in 2 weeks.
I think that, and this is probably not the way you should do it, and it's kind of why we're having this conversation. We talked about versus Troy. Why not throw him in the first half? Like, you and I have had this conversation already. I think for some reason, the way Kirk does things is, if they lose the games, this sounds bad, but it's the only way I'm going to put it. Yep. We were a dog against Ohio State for a reason. That's a game that on paper we're supposed to lose. We are favored in most of the other games. Those are games we're supposed to win. I think that some part of Kirk feels like if we win the games we're supposed to win and we lose the games that we're supposed to lose, there's no need for a change. Like, then the quarterback is not – changing the quarterback is not going to change the outcomes of those games. We won the games we were supposed to. We lost the games we were supposed to. Losing to Washington this weekend in Kinnick, 11 a.m., Big Ten home opener, Fox Big Noon kickoff. Hawks are favored, I believe, by 2 or 3 points.
It opened at 4, I think. I think it's 4 points. 2 at this point.
Okay. That feels like a game we're maybe supposed to win.
I think Washington's better than I thought they were.
Oh, they're definitely better than anyone thought they were going to be. But maybe we're still supposed to win this game. And I think you're right. I still truly believe that if we go out there and K doesn't look good, I think they will still consider it. They will take a hard look at it.
Let me ask you this, because this could bring you my next point. If you were Kirk, would you start Brendan Sullivan next week? Based on everything, and I know we're projecting or we're speculating, but we can't be in practice day by day, so we can only go off the information that we have right now.
Next week, I'm curious
if you would start Brendan
against Washington on Saturday.
This Saturday.
If it was me, I'm not gonna say if I was Kirk.
That's fair. Yeah, sorry. Yes.
If I'm Kirk Ferentz, I'm probably just running Cade out there.
Okay.
But if I'm me at this point, I think Brendan, and we haven't seen a lot of it. I'd love to see. Again, this is why you go play him for a quarter. I would like to see what Brendan Sullivan looks like in just not a 2 minute, not a goal line situation.
Yes, correct.
I want to see him on like our 35 yard line, first and 10. and it's like 0-0 in the first quarter.
With a real playbook. I mean, even against Ohio State, he only threw one pass. He completed, but then they are basically running the ball.
I want to see what it looks like when he throws it out to the sideline. I want to see what it looks like when he has to go through a couple progressions and then throw across the middle or down the seam. I want to see, you know, I think we know his scrambling ability is better. I want to see him command the offense a little bit, or command the huddle, or how the guys respond to him and that kind of stuff. Assuming that all of that has been satisfactory, like they trust him enough to go in goal line situations. So I'm assuming that he's done pretty okay in practice. Then I'm at this point probably running him out there in the structure that you said, because if he's not, even if he's a drop off, what is it, 1 or 2%? It's not going to be noticeable on the scoreboard.
That's where I was going with that.
And if it does get noticeable, then you just put Cade back in. So I don't think there is a down. You know, what's the upside? What's the downside?
Okay, so you're in the same boat as I am, because I said, what's the downside? I would personally play Brendan Sullivan this week. I would too. I think it makes the most sense. I think, I'm not saying that he's proven to be worlds better, but this is not an unknown backup quarterback. This is a guy who has started and has won Big Ten games. It's a guy with a high completion percentage, and that's something that Kirk and Tim really, really value. I think it opens up the playbook a little bit more just based off what I know or what I've been told about Brendan Sullivan. So, I don't envy the decision, but it's gotten to the point where I think you phrased it very well. If it's a 5 to 10% drop-off, do we really notice it?
Yeah, no, I don't think we do. I don't.
And the other part is, and again, this just is another mind-blowing stat, because, again, I'm not trying to sit here and pile on Cade. Okay, I'm really not. But
some people might say you are. Actually, this is one of the things. This is we had a couple people in our Discord who, you know, when you're a media member, and I have a lot of these as well. There's people out there that are iCult people, and then there's some people out there that, like, they're not iCult people.
They hate me. It's fine.
There's a lot of people out there that are not Kluver people. Probably more not than there are. And some people were like talking about you in our Discord the other day. They're like, during games, he just tweets about like the stuff that's like, I don't know. The flashy stuff. Like he says stuff to like get reaction. And part of me is like, I mean, it's kind of his job. Like,
at some point, though, too, like, I get tweet out anything there is, and because there's enough people watching Twitter in the game at the same time, like, trust me, like, this is going to sound totally arrogant, and I don't mean for this to sound arrogant at all. I have enough people that follow me where I'm going to get reactions no matter what I tweet, so, like, I don't
Is you have 50,000 followers, so, like, whatever you put out, just by the sheer amount of people that are going to see it, it's going to look like it's getting tons of engagement. I think one of the things was like, he always like shits on the players during the game, but then like talks them up when he comes on the podcast with you, Tyler. And I was like, well, okay. I'd love to hear your response to that. But I think I didn't really answer to them what my opinion on it was. And I think, to be honest, that is just the nature of social media. You put out a stat like he hasn't thrown a touchdown to a Power 5 wide receiver since he played us in the Big Ten Championship. You put out that – I think you put out a tweet the other day. This one was kind of ballsy. Like, that's the worst coaching decision KF has ever made.
I still stand by that, too. It made no sense to me.
And I think –
I'll tell you this, though. Here's what I'll tell you, Tyler. I'm not the only one that felt like that. I may have phrased it slightly more aggressive.
Oh, I know.
I may have put it in David's word, like David terms, because like I get it. Like I don't know. I would
actually
keep it real, but
openly. We've kind of shifted this to you, which is whatever.
Like, I didn't mean for that to happen.
No, but I kind of did it. I would love to hear your thoughts on because to some extent, I think Twitter is so short and punchy. The way that it is, the nature of it.
Oh, that, totally.
That in it, and you're a reporter. The way that you use it is going to it's naturally going to come off a certain way. Like even Lystico, who's like the most non-confrontational human in person ever. It seems, or Doctorman. Totally. their Twitters come off as like punchy and a little bit like spicy sometimes, because that is the nature of the platform. And then when we get on a 40, we're 41 minutes into this podcast, except for 2 minutes when David dipped out to try and avoid quarterback questions. When you have nuance and detail to answers and you can explain yourself in more than 280 characters, then it seems like, oh, wait, maybe you are flipping. And no, it's not. I don't think it's flipping. And now I'm going to get told that I'm like making excuses for you in our Discord, and it is what it is. But I just think the nuance and the detail comes out. You get the full story. When you're in the middle of a game and there's more, like David Eichel can't stop the game to make
tweets. I got five different things I'm doing at the same time. I mean, that's why I rewatch games to get a better perspective on stuff, because I don't remember everything that happens in a game.
Right.
Because I'm writing my game story. I'm updating my board. I'm tweeting. I'm working on a post game column. Like, I'm doing all this different stuff to where the other part is, and this is just social media in general, people interpret it how they want to, not the way it's intended. Like that's the other part of
intention
it.
Intention has been thrown to the wind. It's maybe the one thing I hate the most about modern day society is that it doesn't matter what you intended. It's how somebody interprets it and how feel.
Absolutely. For example, I'll go back to the first game of the year, right? To where I said Nick Jackson had a tremendous breakup, and I tweeted like, I did not know Nick Jackson was that athletic.
Yeah.
And a lot of people probably interpreted that as being negative, right? They could have, whatever. I have relationships with these athletes that I cover. Like, I talk to them enough every week, or I've gotten to know them, whatever. As I was walking out the following week, like somebody was asking Nick, he was eating something. He goes, oh, we're eating. He goes, chicken and rice for my balance so I can work on my athleticism. He looked at me and just started laughing. And then I ended up talking to him for 5 minutes.
That's hilarious.
Like, he's a great guy. Like,
yeah.
I don't mean to, I'm not trying to like shit on anybody, but at the same time, like, if there's stats that are mind blowing, I'm going to put it out there. And I'll tell you what, right when Cade tore it up against Illinois State in that second half, I was the first person to boost him up.
Yeah. I think one of the things too is like, people have to consider the position you're in. Ultimately, you are, for lack of a better term, you're trying to get clicks. You're trying to get people to listen to you. You're trying to get people. That's what the fucking job, like, I'm trying to do that. At the Washed Up Walk-Ons here, I'm trying to get people to click on our podcast, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Every single title I've used for a podcast since we started this season has been clickbaity in some way. Like, I'll do half a quote so that people are like, oh, I'd love to see the... So like,
hell of a test drive, right?
Oh, that was a great one last week.
That was.
But
I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, people can interpret the way I say things or how other people say it. Like, it's not getting back to what I do. I'm going to just always give you my blunt opinion. I mean, Kluver, you've known me for what, 4 or 5 years at this point?
Yeah.
I act the exact same way.
And I've, not that I've been in a lot of conversations, but like, whenever you do come up, I think, like, I've tried to say, like, it's just you have to take the social media part of people for what they say on there for what it is. It's just like, not,
totally.
It's not the full story. But also, after talking to you about it, I think David Eichel confirmed wishy-washy flip-flopper. That's going to be the title of this episode. So it's a good one. 45 minutes again, like I said, had nothing to talk about, found plenty to talk about.
I think you and I, when we started this, we're like, oh, we'll give you 15, 20 minutes. I think every one of them's gone like 40 plus. I mean, I'm just professional yappers at this point, dude.
Let's finish it with this. This feels a little bit like the Minnesota game did.
Yeah.
And I know week to week things change, right? Like, we beat Minnesota. Yay. We get the bye week. We feel good. We lose to Ohio State. Boo. Like,
everybody knew they were losing to Ohio State. And it all but confirmed to me they're one of the most talented teams I've ever seen assembled.
They're very good. They're very good. Excited to see what they could do nationally this year. This weekend will be a good
test. They're going to curb stomp Oregon. I'll put it right now. They beat them by 17 plus.
Wow. That'd be great. It now feels again like, man, this one you need to – but to be honest, it's kind of – I think the feeling of this game – and welcome to being an Iowa fan – and already have lost twice, and your goal is to still maybe be in a conversation at the end of the year here, which, by the way, a lot of teams losing could happen. There's still some room there. There's some shit. There's not going to be very many teams that lose no games this year. And if Iowa can just lose two, they could still be in the conversation, but that means that every week is a can't lose, must win kind of feeling. And
I think this week especially is that you can't be 3-3 heading into Michigan State at a night game. I don't think Michigan State's particularly good by any means, but a primetime opportunity with this team, man, like
kind of weird they gave Iowa and Michigan State the primetime slot, by the way.
Have you seen the slate next week?
Is it bad?
Oh, it's awful. Let me just pull it up real quick.
Looking at it that way, then maybe they see Iowa, Michigan State as a good game, and they're like, okay, well, maybe we could have a good old school Big Ten battle.
Yeah, I almost have it up. Hold up. Oregon, I'll read them in order. Oregon at Purdue, Nebraska at Indiana. That's going to be a great
game. That's going to be an awesome game.
Wisconsin at Northwestern, UCLA at Rutgers, Michigan at Illinois. I think that will be a good game. USC at Maryland and Iowa at Michigan State. I mean, it's not a good slate. Yeah,
there's just nothing great about
it. I think Iowa's probably the third best game. I think the Michigan-Illinois game will be a lot of fun.
I think the Indiana-Nebraska game is going to be awesome. It's
game of the week.
Yeah, and I think Indiana is going to get that one. I think they're going to get that one.
I'm riding Coach Sig.
I am too. I saw him say Google me, bro, it's over.
Same thing as that old was the David Fizdale when he listed all that stat and goes take that for data, then walked off the podium.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Must-win game this weekend. David Eichel joins us for another press review show. Thank you, David, for being here. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Go check out David on Twitter. You can see all his flip floppy takes. And come back here next week for the other side of it. We'll keep having conversations about the press conferences and about the
teams. Just Photoshop like flip flops and me on a beach and like a wave coming in or something like that.
That'd be great. That'd be a good thumbnail.
There you go.
Flip. Be careful what you wish for. You might see a thumbnail here in about an hour when we do this. All right, we'll see you everybody tomorrow for the preview show. The not preview preview show, and then 5-10-5 show on Friday with Coach Justin Lima, and then the Hawks play Washington. Until then, see ya. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.